Bienvenidos and welcome to episode 30 of the Jacobin Sports Show. I am Matthew Miranda, joined as always by the straw that stirs our Shirley Temple, Jonah Birch. Jonah, you may not know this, but by reaching 30 episodes and 8 months of broadcast, we have passed some big names in the history of media. I want you to know that the Jacobin Sports Show has now been on the air longer than the ill-fated Magic Hour. You may remember Magic Johnson's 1996 television talk show.
Oh, do I remember?
Put in the grave by Howard Stern's appearance. We have also outlasted Freaks and Geeks, My So-Called Life, and the original Battlestar Galactica.
Those are three, I don't know, would you call them cult classics? They're definitely, they have a strong fan base of my generation, I feel like, all three of those.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. We are basically, if you think of Kawhi Leonard, took down the Miami Heat dynasty, took down the Golden State dynasty with the Raptors, and some would argue took down the Spurs dynasty by leaving. He conquered three dynasties. We are the Kawhi Leonard of leftist sports podcasts, having taken down Battlestar, My So-Called Life, and Freaks and Geeks. Take that, James Franco. Your short stories should never have been published before mine were.
Wow. Wow, let the resentment out. I like it.
I'm throwing it
in. If we were Mike and the Mad Dog, you know, the legendary WFAN duo.
Legendary.
in many ways.
Yes.
Which of us is Mike and which is the Mad Dog? I think it's clear.
I'll admit to moments of feeling a little bit of both. I want to say Chris Russo just because I don't want it to be
you
Mike.
You are Francesa, my friend. I am definitely Chris Russo. I am pure Mad Dog in my energy. And, you know, I can let out little yelps and, you know.
You do yelp.
Can I tell you a secret? I'm going to share a secret with our podcast listener. Occasionally,
30 episodes in, this is what they get.
Occasionally, I still go back and listen to the Mike and the Mad Dog episode from after Game 7 of the 2004, the morning after ALCS Game 7. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can find, you know, like an hour of the episode on YouTube. And it's, you know, it's both cathartic and prescient, I would say, that episode, deeply. And, you know, Chris Russo, God love him, and I will always love him. I think he was a Giants fan, is that right? And then became
yes,
a Mets.
Very much so.
Yeah, yeah. But he was enjoying it in a way that I deeply, deeply, you know, appreciated and still respect to this day.
There's a famous clip of Russo after the Giants, I think, they lost the World Series to the Angels in 2002, I think.
Yeah.
And Russo goes on this mad rant about, like, the Yankees' success versus, at that time, the Giants' lack of success. And it's just classic, excellent radio.
Oh, I gotta listen. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is that the pain of losing through the 80s and the 90s brought out the best in all of us. It did in Red Sox fans. You know, right? I mean, now it's like we're winners. I don't know. You know, maybe we're worse people for it. Let me ask you this question. Do you think that Mike Francesa has the politics that I imagine him to have? I'm sure I could just Google this and find out all sorts of like, how do we think he feels about, you know, Donald Trump?
I think Donald Trump probably once said hi to him, and that's enough for Francesa to now go to his grave talking about Trump as if he is, you know, his right-hand man. He definitely leans right-wing. He definitely is not anti-Trump. He definitely is the kind of person who thinks Trump has some good ideas. He's definitely in that ballpark.
Okay, can I tell you something? So apparently Francesa was, just like you're saying, a big Trump supporter. Clearly they knew each other, loved him the first time around. Apparently last summer, his handling of COVID lost him Francesa's support.
Oh.
And so there's these long quotes. Can I read you some quotes?
Please do.
He says, "We're watching one thing happen in our city on the 11 o'clock news every night. We're watching people die. And now we know who died. people were seeing them die by the tens and twenties per day, blah, blah, blah. They don't have the supplies they need to combat the crisis, he says, of people in healthcare. So this is Mike Francesca, serious analyst. I don't know why I want to call him Francesca.
It has a certain charm.
Then he says, so don't give me the MyPillow guy. Don't give me the MyPillow guy doing a song and dance up here on a Monday afternoon when people are dying in Queens, Francesca added. Get the stuff made, get the stuff where it needs to go, and get the boots on the ground. Treat this like the crisis it is. That is some just profound, fucking penetrating political analysis from Mike Francesa. I bet you thought you didn't think he had that in him, did you?
Oh, no, I did, because the only thing that Francesa likes more than someone praising him is the opportunity to sound smarter than somebody else. So, yeah, I'm not surprised by that at all.
The MyPillow guy is a low bar, my friend. It's a low bar. Although I did see an ad for his pillows recently, and they look very comfortable, I gotta say.
If they're soft enough for your conscience to rest easy on, then they're very good pillows indeed.
I have no principles. You know,
after 30 episodes, principles are a thing of the past.
They are.
Speaking of, Jonah and I today just, you know, we have a lot of guests, and we have a lot of deep and penetrating discussions, but sometimes you just want to let your hair down and have a bitch fest. So today's episode of the Jacobin Sports Show is entitled Kvetch and Shoot. And all we're going to do today is throw up topics.
Brilliant.
And complain about them. I'm going to start us off with not something I went to bed expecting to be kvetching about, which is the Cristiano Ronaldo saga. I went to bed last night fully expecting to wake up to just screaming headlines about this stunning Ronaldo going to play for Guardiola at Man City. Just, I went to bed not even being able to imagine what I would wake up to. And that's true, because when I woke up to the news that City has been pipped by United and Ronaldo has signed a 2-year deal to go play at Old Trafford, where he began his Premier League days.
Did you say pipped?
I did. I get very British when I talk about football.
Oh my God.
It's all chalk and cheese and six and sevens and... That's right. Pipped. That's where Ronaldo made his debut on the pitch at Old Trafford.
Listen, Tony Blair.
Isn't that also a Wally Pip thing? Didn't that become a verb? I'm going to claim that's also an American thing, right?
Is that Wally Pipp, the New York Yankees first baseman who was superseded by Lou Gehrig? Is that
the Drew Bledsoe to Lou Gehrig's Tom Grady, if you will?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor Drew Bledsoe.
He made $100 billion. He's doing okay.
Yeah. So here's what I find. So first of all, this whole Ronaldo saga is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. One thing that's interesting is that Man United paid nothing for him. Yeah. I mean, it max out at what? I think was it 25 million pounds?
I saw a tweet that Messi and Ronaldo have combined to move for like 12 million euros or something. It's like some ridiculously small number.
So here's what someone said on Twitter, and I agree with it fundamentally. Lionel Messi is not at Barcelona because that club horribly destroyed, eviscerated its finances over years and years and years, right? And simply couldn't pay him anymore the contract that he wanted. Cristiano Ronaldo is not at Juve. He's on Man United because he simply is not the player he once was. And tell me if I'm horribly underrating him. Someone who scored however a kajillion Champions League goals, mm-hmm. you know, something like 130 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he's 36. I understand Tom Brady, people like that have rewritten the age, you know, the limits. But he's still a goal scorer. I'm not terrified of him the way you would be even a couple of years ago. And it really, I could see it causing serious problems at United. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe they are about to take over the league. That is entirely possible, you know. But I could see this being an issue. And I wonder, did City get pipped or did City get some kind of cold feet and want to go in a different direction?
I've seen a lot of headlines and stories, and you never know who gets it from what agent and for what purpose, that have specifically framed it as that City decided not to go for it. And the language, I have to say, was consistent even when the rumors began. It was very, it all sounded very, like, if it happens, it happens. It sounded very, like, casual. It never sounded like this was, like, City desperate to make it happen. I think it would have been, on the one hand, a really good move for City, because City, one, for all the chances they create, they don't have that just classic,
sure,
like, dead-eyed shark. They don't have that, and Kane could have been that, but he's, yeah, not going anywhere. And so just for that, Ronaldo would have been different, and Guardiola has been public about not having that kind of player at City, which he has had in other teams that he's coached. But
of course,
Guardiola also demands a versatility out of all of his players that Ronaldo hasn't had to perform in many, many years. And that, I'm not devastated from attack. Like, Kane would have been more interesting to me, not because he's better at scoring, but because he does more things and he's more of the classic Guardiola kind of striker, or number nine. But Ronaldo really isn't. And I'm not devastated for City, other than I just think, as a fan, just like when I thought they could get Messi, the idea of getting to watch, you know, the greatest when they're still meaningful on your team is always interesting. But I don't feel like this puts United in any position of contention. I still think they have other issues that they would need to address. Maybe now this gets them top four. But like you said, I'm not worried now when City play United that, oh my God, like here's United like they were 10 years ago.
I mean, I'll say this. You know, when City, since Aguero left, yeah, who, by the way, I think he's injured, but he's having cold feet about Barcelona because Messi's not there, yeah?
Uh-huh.
But, and he was obviously, you know, a great striker, an offensive force for, you know, for City for many years. There obviously was an expectation that they were going to get a younger, better superstar. And of course, the Harry Kane thing was what clearly plan A for them, right? I mean, he was plan A for them. He would have fit perfectly there. It would have been, mm-hmm, the perfect addition. So that's not going to work out this year, you know, obviously. I don't know. I mean, could it work out in the future? Are they willing to go with what they have for this until at least the next transfer period, City, and revisit the Harry Kane stuff? What about Haaland? Like, are there younger players that they could be looking at? I you know, they're clearly willing to spend, mm-hmm, right? And the financial fair play rules are financial fair bullshit.
Right.
You know, so I, you know, if they wanted to invest in Cristiano Ronaldo would, if they were really ready to commit, you got to think he would be wearing that, you know, hideous light blue, right? You know,
I think that anyone who comes on the market that can fill that role for them, which they need.
Yep.
They are potentially in on as long as the player is interested. If Kylian Mbappe was interested in going to Manchester City, they would shell out money for him. But I don't, you know, I think he has his eyes on Real and that's it. So that's not an option. They are,
or definitely, Liverpool.
Well, of course, I mean, that goes without saying. And of course, Haaland at Dortmund, it's known that City are interested, but it's known that everyone is interested.
Yep.
So again, it's where does the player want to go? The kind of, The news that popped up this week that wasn't a huge story, but I wonder if it's having more of an impact than people are registering, is that Pep Guardiola said when this season is finished, he's taking a break. When he returns, he wants to coach at the international level. So
yep,
that means if you are this 20, 21-year-old world-class striker, do you want to go play for Pep Guardiola for one season without knowing what will follow? Or,
sure.
You know, so I think that could be having an impact.
That's interesting.
I think City will be fine waiting until the transfer window to try to do, you know, to see what's available then, probably for much less. And then next year it'll depend on, you know, who comes in and who they're attractive to, I think.
Now, and do you think this is a game changer for United?
I think it could be only in the level of that it could help guarantee them a top four finish, which I think at this point is a big deal for them. They need that. I think they have to go from a team that has looked more in recent seasons like it could trend in the Arsenal direction of, you know, you're just increasingly slipping down the table, versus more of a team like Chelsea or even a lesser like Spurs, who are always in contention. They're always there. I think the Ronaldo move and I think other things that United have done this summer help get them more back up a level. But I think City, Chelsea, and Liverpool at least are all a step above United, even with Ronaldo there.
I mean, it, you know, they're such an inconsistent team, and there are times when they look unbeatable, right? And maybe that's just a function of having Paul Pogba, you know. They have a lot of talent, of course, you know, on really just across the board. A lot of very, you know, impressive players. Unless they develop more consistency, you know, then whatever, there's going to be real limits. I mean, are they more talented than Liverpool? Probably. I don't know. Are they as talented as Chelsea? Maybe not. Maybe that's not true. But, you just feel like you can't rely on them and you're not, you know.
Plus, all the other top three teams have had the experience of fighting and winning something together mostly as a unit. And yep. It wouldn't just be United having to rise to that level of contention, but then they would also have to top all three teams who have that somewhat in their fabric. I think that's a lot to do in one season. I think if United had another summer next year like they've had this year, maybe now you're looking at, okay, like, but not yet. I don't think yet. I'm going to acknowledge now to hating myself as part of Catch and Shoot. I hate myself, Jonah Birch, as a City fan, because this is where I have now arrived. As a fan who, you know, took such immense joy years ago just in, like, a trophy and just being a cute team. My team won the league in completely dominating fashion. My team has been the dominant power in English football for years. And today, I'm not irritated because they're really threat. Like, my team lost Ronaldo, and it doesn't really materially do anything other than make them not absolute favorites to do it all again.
Yeah.
I mean, if he had come, does even Liverpool think that they're going to win the league if he comes to City?
This year? No. Whatever. With Liverpool, of course, it's a question of injuries. I mean, the real issue with the team is a question of depth and whether some of the younger players can fill roles that seem maybe beyond them. But you know, but no, that's true. I mean, look, the best thing for me personally about seeing Ronaldo go to City would have been the reaction of United fans, who would have been so angry. I mean, so pissed in a way that would be just
a little bit salty.
Yeah. I mean, his history with the club and whatever. And now, you know, They're trying to, there's a bit of a nostalgia trip here.
That's the one thing that could have brought the whole league together.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, all those great United teams, and probably, I don't know, I'm not a United fan. You got to think that 99 was the team that they remember the best and that, you know, mean the most to them. But that 2008 team that Ronaldo was on was probably the best United team. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the 99 team was the team that won the treble, right? And, had that incredible Champions League run. But the 2018 might have been the most talented, I think. You know?
Yeah, that was an incredible team. He was
so good as a young player.
My next 2 points were both New York-related kvetches, which is only appropriate. The first is the New York Post, which was the paper that informed me, and I haven't seen this in the Telegraph or anywhere else today, that a Manchester City player, Benjamin Mendy, is facing 4 counts of rape and 1 count of sexual assault, has been suspended by the team pending investigation. Awful news. And also, so the Post, you know, has the story, which I'm grateful for, because I haven't seen it anywhere else. But in classic journalism school formatting, the paragraph, the article ends with a note about how many trophies Mendy has won at Manchester City. And I really think we can be at the point as a society where we all agree that when the article is about somebody being charged with 4 counts of rape and 1 count of sexual assault, it doesn't really matter how many FA Cup trophies he was on the bench. Come on. Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's an awful, awful story, obviously. And I don't know, what else is there to say, you know?
Yeah, but there's not that to say. We don't need Benjamin Mendy's career CV at the end of an article just informing us about, you know, what's going on here. Yeah.
Really awful.
And also in New York, and deserving of some complaining right now, Jonah, in a rapid shift of subject and tone, the New York Mets. The New York Mets.
What a transition.
Have, even by Mets, even, right? That whiplash you just felt in that transition, that has been the Met fans' basic last month of existence. They were in first into August. They were 10 over 500 in June. They were kind of rolling along. And then the league decided the Mets would spend the entire month playing the Dodgers and the Giants. And that's it. That's all she wrote. They are now a losing team. I believe they are closer to fourth than they are to the division. No shot at the wild card. The owner is firing off Steinbrenner-esque tweets about how hard can it be for professional hitters to hit. And here's my specific complaint about the Mets, which is when the Wilpon sold, it was very much like a neoliberal monster being voted out of office. Like, nobody's sad that the Wilpons are gone at all. But we all missed out on the fact that, like, the demagogue that we voted in wasn't going to change the world, and maybe they won't ever, but they weren't going to change it this season. And yet, the one thing you hoped for was just, give me a sign that something is fundamentally different. That's all we want. You know, so they signed Francisco Lindor. Okay. $341 million contract, that seems to be a sign something has changed. But if you look at the Mets as they wrap up this abomination of a year, Sandy Alderson was hired to appoint a president of baseball operations. The president of baseball operations position remains basically open, being operated by Sandy Alderson. The general manager is only the general manager because the man they chose to be the general manager was forced out of office for being basically a sexual predator. And the manager is only the manager because for some reason, Carlos Beltran has gotten more of the fallout from the Astros cheating scandal than like anybody else in the world, including all the players. So he lost his job and Luis Rojas got it instead. When you have a bunch of people in charge that nobody actually wanted to be in that position, that is very New York Mets.
Let me, I have two questions for you about the Mets and their struggles. Yeah. And by the way, it hurts us both deeply that the Yankees are so fucking good right now. I mean, so good.
It's the longest winning streak in like 60 years. It's ridiculous.
Like a month ago, I thought you thought, you know, Aaron Boone was not going to survive the season, right? You know, and whatever.
It was a good time. It was a good time to hate the Yankees back then.
Aroldis Chapman is still probably finished, but you know. So, but about the Mets, my two questions. First of all, are you uncomfortable with the fact that your cajillionaire owner, who's going to save the team from the Wilpons, not only tweets but tweets with such bad grammar and syntax. Like, if you ever look at his tweets, it's just like word, three spaces, another word, no sentence at the end, comma, you know, space, two spaces. What, you're just like, dude, hire an assistant to proofread your tweets. I'm just saying, I'm not a snob about this. It's fine. But if you're going to be like the owner of the team, the face of the franchise, I feel like you should spend on that. Maybe I'm wrong.
I will say, as a graduate from undergrad and graduate school from the state higher educational system, and someone who dated and hung around with a lot of our Ivy League, very well off people, I am not remotely surprised by wealthy Steve Cohen's complete lack of grammatical awareness. I'm not surprised at all. Shout out to Cornell University. I saw a lot of Steve Cohen's at Cornell. Not surprised at all. That's right. Put you on blast today, Ithaca.
Dude, it doesn't make you seem like, you know, a man of the people. To me, you just seem like an asshole, you know, and that may, again, maybe I'm being unfair. He does, like, criticize his own team, you know, on Twitter regularly, I would say. Yeah, I mean, like you're referencing. You can look at Stephen A. Cohen 2. I believe that's his Twitter handle. And, you know, he lives in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Not to be confused with the politician Steve Cohen.
No.
Who's a very different person, and you do not want to read one expecting the other.
No,
that's true. Yeah, I think when the Mets win, Cohen's eccentricities will soften. Like, Steinbrenner was a monster until the 90s, till the mid-90s. And then he never changed at all as a person. He almost traded Mariano Rivera in a deal for, like, Tony Fernandez. He had to be talked out of it. Like, he just became charming because the team started winning. And if the team wins, Cohen's money will matter and he will be popular. But I will definitely agree with you that this season, he's not getting out of this season with quite the shining glory he came into it with.
Can I just say,
Twitter-wise and otherwise, yeah.
If you Google Stephen Cohen, actually the first person who comes up is neither the Mets owner nor the Tennessee politician, but Steve Cohen is an American magician who specializes in parlor magic. Sometimes called the Millionaire's Magician, he performs regularly at the Lot New York Palace Hotel, in Manhattan, and at private parties in other places. I don't know. He better be a damn good magician if he's going to be the Millionaire's Magician.
Look, if Steve Cohen is the Millionaire's Magician, he's too low class for Steve Cohen, the billionaire.
Fair.
He's not the billionaire's magician.
That's true. I want to be. That's right. The Mets need
Tennessee. Steve Cohen is the billionaire's magician.
There you go.
He makes that shit happen for them.
Now there's a campaign slogan. More seriously, I wonder if you are worried about Francisco Lindor. And let me just say, he's hit like shit this year. That's not a lie. Mm-hmm. He has not looked great. Mm-hmm. And he is your how big is the contract? $300 million or whatever it is.
$341 million.
Yeah. So for $341 million, it's true. You want a superstar, right? You want an anchor for your team. We're talking about someone who, you know, whatever. He's just entering his prime. He's not old, so there's that. You know, I think he's, what, 28, maybe? Something like that?
28? Yeah, around there. Maybe even younger.
But are you concerned at all, I guess, is my question, about his trajectory for this team?
Yeah, there's reasons. I mean, there's reasons I'm concerned, and there's reasons that I'm not. I'm concerned because, like you say, with all the asterisks that you would put next to, okay, this year is his first year in a different league with a different team and everything. Last season, obviously, was shortened by almost 2/3, and it was a weird thing for everyone. So you could write that off as like, okay, these are both kind of exceptional circumstances. You could also say, well, it's been a couple of years, though, since Francisco Lindor was playing awesome. As a Met fan, there's concern specifically because this stirs up memories of prior ill-suited moves where the Mets paid a lot to bring in a glamorous Cleveland midfielder who bombed. First, it was Carlos Baerga in the mid-90s, and then Roberto Alomar.
Carlos Baerga. Wow. There is a name I have not... Yeah, go ahead.
For myself specifically, the concern is, as a Puerto Rican, Baerga, Puerto Rican Cleveland midfielder, same with Alomar, same with Lindor. I don't want that. But for myself, and I'm sure at least for people on the Cleveland baseball side of things, there is that inescapable, like, even when the deal was made, he wasn't coming off of a great season, like you said. And there had been some questions of, like, what are his best. So, but I'll say this also in defense of Lindor. And this has happened for many years with the Mets and Yankees. When Mike Piazza came to the Mets, he, by his standards, struggled for a while when he first got there. And he was an unrestricted free agent and was getting booed by Met fans. I remember being very concerned that they were going to boo Mike Piazza, like, out of town the first year he was there. They gave him, I think at the time, the biggest deal ever, which helped him stay, and then all success from there. When Carlos Beltran came to the Mets, struggled. He had just come off of a historic performance with the Astros in the playoffs where he was hitting a home run every other at-bat. Comes to the Mets, he hit like 240.
Yep, I remember.
Seemed to be pulling a grounder to second base, got booed. Major, major concern. He had a year to adjust. He did fine. So I'm not concerned with Lindor because I still feel like let him have 1 year under his belt. The team's going to get better. Like, they have an activist owner. They're going to spend money. He's going to be in a better lineup, probably with a better pitching staff next year than he is now. Give him a year and then let's see how he is. My biggest concern is not on the field, and this is where he reminds me of yet another Puerto Rican kid who came to the Mets and had problems, Bobby Bonilla. Bonilla famously at his introductory press conference, he was a very smiley person, and he said, like, you know, just try to wipe the smile off my face, which is like in a horror movie saying, like, no, you guys go on ahead, I'll go on my own through the dark and, like, find you. Francisco Lindor is a lot like that and is very open, I think admirably, about he just came back off of injury and in his first at-bat he got a very warm response. And he said after that game he had been kind of anxious. He didn't know what the reaction would be from the crowd. It was really uplifting. He's very open about how much he wants crowd support. He's also very open about not liking being booed. And he was booed last night. Twice. Yep. He had some bad at-bats late in the game, or just some unfortunate results late in the game. That concerns me. Part of me thinks maybe it's a new world, because Pete Alonso on the Mets has done this also. He's been very almost like Pollyanna-ish about, you know, guys, just smile. Like, it's just baseball. Like, that doesn't always fly. And I'm hoping it's a new world and more of the fans will appreciate, like, these are human beings trying their best in a difficult, you know, competitive profession, but I worry that it's still sports and it's still New York City. And I've seen Met fans, you know, tear into lots of people. And I worry for Lindor, you know, are you too open of a human to make it in a market like that? But maybe he changes, or maybe he doesn't. And the circumstances have changed. I'm not sure.
Did Bobby Bonilla have serious issues with the press? He did. It was in New York that he did, right?
Bobby Bonilla very famously was in the locker room, and Bob Clappish, who I think at the time was with the Bergen Record, Bob Clappish is in the locker room, and he had written something critical of Bonilla, and this killed me because I don't know if I've said this on the show, but Bobby Bonilla's aunt worked for my father. He was a principal, and she was like his office administrator, and so Bobby Bonilla used to write me, like, personal letters when I was a kid and send me birthday cards and send me, like, autographs. Like, he was, like, a very nice person. But so when he came to the Mets, I was, like, I could not be happier. Like, this really nice guy I knew was coming for the Mets. And Bob Clappish had written something critical. And Bonilla turns in the locker room, sees Clappish, like, mutters something. Clappish, not one to back down, I think, asks him to repeat it. Bobby says the infamous line as he gets in Clappish's face, "I'll show you the Bronx." Had to be separated.
Wait, what does that mean? What is that?
It means that you're going to meet all five boroughs in one fist, and he's going to start with...
I get it. Got it.
So no, Bobby Bonilla did not do well with the press. He wore infamously, or the rumor was that he used to wear cotton balls in his ears in games when he played right field so he wouldn't hear everything the fans were yelling at him. Bobby Bonilla didn't do well with anybody in New York. And in fact, in his second stint, he came back a few years later in a trade for someone much better. I think in the Piazza trade, actually, he somehow came over, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
And Florida. He was on the Mets in the playoffs when they were losing. They lost the series in 16 innings, but there was a game they won in like 14 innings in game 5. And Ricky Henderson and Bobby Bonilla were in the clubhouse, like playing cards, having decided like the season was over as the Mets staged this like unbelievable comeback against Kevin McGlinchey, I think it was, of the Atlanta Braves. So Bobby Bonilla
is not good at anything in
New York.
I find stories like that to be so fucking stupid. And I don't know, like I played baseball. I don't want to brag. I was pretty good as a, you know, child, 14-year-old. I played Little League with future Red Sox excellent reliever, Manny Del Carmen.
Oh, yes. You
know, was on the Regan League, nice. Little League team. He was, you know, from Jamaica Plain, Boston, where I grew up. And, you know, won a World Series with the Red Sox. And look, I'm just saying, if you're not playing and the game is going inning after inning after fucking inning, I don't know. Does it matter if you're sitting at the you know on the bench watching or if you're in the clubhouse? Who gives a shit? When the 2011 Red Sox collapsed after a historically excellent start, all of the fans, there was a whole to-do made of some of the pitchers eating chicken and drinking beer in the clubhouse. You know, at the end of, when the truth is that they collapsed because their pitching fell apart, right? Because the team was not built correctly, and some of the older pitchers got hurt, and they had some issues in their bullpen, and it had nothing to do with chicken or beer. Why do we care? Why do we give a shit, you know?
I will tell you why. And this is straight
explain this to me.
This is straight from the mouth of the magician, the millionaire's magician, Steve Cohen. Rally caps can't work if you're inside the dugout. So if Bonilla and Henderson are in the clubhouse as 2 of 25, that's 8% reduction in rally cap power, and sometimes that's all it takes. If two of the Mets had been in the dugout in 86, Bill Buckner is a hero. That's why, Joe.
If they were in the clubhouse, that's right.
It all goes differently. Bob Stanley throws it straight heat right down the middle of the plate, and the Red Sox...
The steamer.
Broke the
steamer, Bob Stanley. You know, it's one of those things that people get outraged about, and it feels very performative to me. Always very performative.
Agreed.
And
yeah. I'm not pissed at them, but like
No. I'm just saying.
You know, I would tell you this as a Med fan who has seen there's a lot of different treatment of players depending on their skin color to this day.
Of course.
If Bonilla and Ricky Henderson had been Al Leiter and Turk Wendell, I do not think. In fact, I know why it wouldn't get the same response, because Keith Hernandez has spoken and it gets laughs on the air. In 86, when the Mets were down to the Red Sox, to your Boston Red Sox, to your Bob McNamara, Wade Boggs, Marty Barrett, Spike Owen, Rich Gedman, Jim Rice, Calvin Schiraldi.
You have an incredible memory.
Those Red
Sox. Don't forget Dwight Evans was still there.
Dewey Evans in the outfield, okay?
Yeah, Dave Henderson, obviously.
David Henderson, Oil Can Boyd.
Oil Can Boyd was my favorite player on the
I love that guy.
Go ahead.
So, Keith Hernandez was in the dugout drinking, convinced the season. He made his last out. He was the second out in the inning. It was Backman, then Hernandez. Goes to the dugout, convinced it's over, sits in a chair, starts drinking. The Mets get a hit. Gary Carter gets a single, and Hernandez says, as a baseball player, of course, there's hits in this chair. I can't leave this chair. And then I think after that, Kevin Mitchell gets a single, and then Ray Knight gets a single, and then the wild pitch in the air. So Hernandez did not leave the chair. He did not leave, but he didn't go there for good luck. He was pissed, and it's a charming, lovely story. Ricky Henderson and Bobby Bonilla do not get the same slack from the Met fan as Keith Hernandez does.
I have two things to say about everything you just said. First of all, Wally Backman, who is a very flawed individual, but people should look up his rant as his incredible, the YouTube videos of him as a manager, a minor league manager.
Oh, yeah.
Getting kicked out of it. Just in a remarkable YouTube video. I want everyone to go look that up right now. Second of all, Ricky Henderson, who should be beloved for so many reasons. Obviously, you know, MLB baseball stat heads. I mean, famously, Bill James has a whole thing about how he's one of the great players of all time. And he was. You go back and look at his statistics and his consistency and his ability to hit with power and to get on base is just incredible. His longevity was remarkable. The guy was still trying to play when he was 50, right? I mean, that's pretty incredible too. But also was a quote machine. And my favorite Ricky Henderson quote of all time told that it was estimated that 50% of all major league players were using steroids. He said, well, I'm not. So that's 49% right there, which is just an incredible answer to that question. And I appreciate, because I also am not great at math, I deeply appreciate the, the math struggles. I'm not, that's 49% right there.
The great, the great former Met John Olerud, who played with Henderson in Toronto and New York, tells a story of, so they played together in Toronto, and then years later, I think I have the story right, if I remember it, Henderson is talking to Olerud on the Mets, and it's one of their first conversations since Henderson joined the team, and Henderson starts telling Olerud how he used to play with a guy. John Olerud had an injury, a serious brain injury, I think in college. So for the rest of his career, when he played in the field, wherever he was, he had to wear a batting helmet because he couldn't risk another blow to the head. So Henderson is telling Olerud that he used to play with someone who also had to wear. And after a couple of minutes, Olerud realizes that Henderson doesn't realize that Olerud's the same person that
he played with
like 5 years ago. He has no idea that it's John Olerud.
Another, and to be fair there,
go ahead.
John Olerud, very forgettable person, probably.
Oh, you know? Please. John, maybe as a person. He hit 363, was flirting with 400 in 93. Brilliant first
baseman.
He had
a lovely swing. He had a lovely swing.
One more baseball news, and this is actually a complaint, again, about grammar. Not a big one, though, but just a little thing. Chris Sale, again, of your Boston Red Sox last night, tied Sandy Koufax. I don't know if you know this. It was Sale's third career inning, which I guess now they call it immaculate inning, which is 9 pitches, 9 strikes. First Red Sox to do it at Fenway since Pedro Martinez. But immaculate to me is not the word for that kind of a performance. Immaculate is like bolt of blue, like illogical, you know, like the immaculate reception is something that didn't happen a lot. That's why it's the immaculate reception. The immaculate conception, not something that happens a lot. The immaculate inning, Chris Sale's done it 3 times. It can't be immaculate.
Yeah, no, but immaculate just means perfect, doesn't it? You know.
But I feel like immaculate's more like, if you tell someone like perfect, like, okay, that's a compliment. You did a good job. Yeah. If you tell someone immaculate, that means like, holy shit, like that's a higher level of perfection even. Are we just using that for something Chris Sale's done 3 times?
No. Okay. So what you're saying is that it's like a, what's it called? A miracle, you know?
Yeah.
I think for Christianity, and you know, as more of a non-believing Jew, I'm not the expert here, but I thought what made the Immaculate Conception immaculate was that they didn't have sex, if you know what I mean. So it was like, you know, they were, you know, but I'm not an expert on that. I hear what you're saying. Immaculate inning doesn't sound the way you
call
would
it
want
a perfect
it to sound,
inning. Call it a perfect inning.
Yeah.
You know, people have
perfect.
People have perfect games. They don't have immaculate games.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I've given up on this Red Sox team. And
have you? You done?
Yeah. Whatever.
What was the final straw for you with this Red Sox team?
No. I mean, when they got swept by the Yankees in that series, it was you know, it's just terrible. People are killing the front office for not trading for Rizzo, letting him go to the Yankees, and not they obviously wanted to save their bullets, so to speak, you know, and their top prospects, and did not think this was the year to go all in. I can't blame them, but I have given up on this team. It's ironically what everyone was waiting for, which was Chris Sale to come back. He's been great, you know, really excellent. Yeah, and he pitched excellently last night, you know, and whatever. He gave them whatever it was, five innings. But he did pitch his third perfect inning. Let's change that. I agree with you. In the third inning last night, nine pitches, nine strikes. There were some swings out of the strike zone there to get those strikeouts. So, you know, it wasn't like he was blowing people away in the zone. But still a, you know, an impressive performance. He's been really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the grammar, the syntax complaint. Yeah, you know.
You know, it still matters a little bit. Yeah. Still, I let a lot of shit go, but that's syntax more than semantics. Semantics still matters to me. Last point. Yeah. That I want to complain about, which will sound initially hypocritical, but bear with me because it's not, has been the sad story of the divorcing of Dell and Sonia Curry, parents of Seth and Steph Curry.
Yeah.
So my complaint, my kvetch, if you will, is how much people are talking about this. And you may say, hey, a-hole, if you're talking about this, you're... But this is where I say I am.
This does feel really hypocritical, just to say.
Fair, but hear me out. This is where I am less a hypocrite and more just a good new historicist. I am not interested in the story as much as I am interested in the reaction to the story. And
yeah, this is like meta criticism. I get it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, all I want to say, because I've seen. There's one, I don't know if you saw it, but there's one hilarious thread that a guy wrote about basically why Del Curry better not lose her because of what it is to be a single man like these days. Like,
that was amazing. That was amazing.
Incredible.
He was like, you can't handle the cholesterol. You don't have good enough cholesterol to be single out there these days.
He talked about pegging. He talked about everything. It was insanity.
Yeah. It was a deep dive.
It was very good. It was very well done. If I was teaching this semester, I would be teaching that thread. But I just want to say that I've seen a lot of, as is often the case when anything happens, you know, some ham-fisted or insensitive attempts at humor. And just to point out where my brain is at, as someone whose parents divorced when he was an adult, it still sucks. It's not the same as when you're a kid. But it still is an unpleasant, like, traumatic experience. It's not good. The world is a big place, and there is room for all of our jokes, but that does not mean that our jokes belong everywhere. So just a thought for the Currys. It's not an easy time, especially I can't imagine in public.
Let me just add this to what you're saying. Yeah, since joining Twitter like a year and a half ago or whenever it was, you know. And it is an evil cesspool of a place. In delightful at times. In delightful. It has its moments of joy. But NBA Twitter is like there's little particles of insight and information surrounded by just, I mean, talk about toxicity. It is just Dante needs a new fucking ring of hell that is just NBA Twitter.
I'm glad you mentioned Dante. Because I want to ask you now.
Are you going to ask?
When you think of him.
Go ahead.
Do you think hell is actually a lot like Twitter in that there are pockets of delight, but like everything you have to put up with to get them is just so shitty? Is hell more like Twitter than we think? Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I thought you were going to ask me about Dante DiVincenzo. And, you know, now that I'm in Milwaukee, what I think, you know, if I've seen him around. What people are going to do, particularly the quote unquote LeBron stans, is that what I believe, you know?
That's the term.
And the other anti-Steph Curry cohorts, milieus.
Of which there are many.
Yeah. He is a bizarrely hated player. Like, look, whatever. Who am I? I'm filled with passionate hatred of all sorts of people. But at least I feel like it is, you know, like it serves a function, right? There's a reason for it. I'm a Celtics fan. I think you've done my team wrong, or you're just a big rival, so I loathe you or whatever. I can appreciate players I think are great players, right? Watching them, of which, of course, you know, LeBron, and then I would say just aesthetically, Kevin Durant is the greatest player to watch in basketball today. Whatever you think about who the best is, he's the most... His game is just really is a work of art. Kyrie is right about that. You know, basketball at its best feels like art. Steph Curry is an unbelievable player to watch, who had a lot of, you know, a lot of disadvantages, which he overcame to become a truly great player. And I want people to go back and watch the Golden State Oklahoma City regular season. I think it was a February game from like 2015 that Steph wins in overtime 16. On a dagger 40-foot three-pointer that he pulls up on. I think it was 2015. Maybe it was
2016. It was 16. It was 2016.
Yeah, 2016. Right. Just go back and watch the highlights from that game. Watch Steph and Clay. And tell me that whatever you think of Warriors fans or whatever else, tell me that is not beautiful, beautiful basketball to watch. It absolutely is. Why are you so filled with hatred? Particularly if you're some little shit in rural Nebraska who happens to like LeBron James. Just shut the fuck up. Please, on Twitter, shut the fuck up. You know, that is my plea to you.
Two things. One, if you watch the highlight of that moment, there's so much joy that even though it happened in Oklahoma City, in a year where the Thunder were really good, like they were, that's the year that they took the Warriors to seven games. When he hits the shot, the sound, it's one of those videos, it's a very unique sound. Even in that arena, in that moment, it's not just the quiet when the home crowd is disappointed. It's a different kind of noise where you, and if you see the faces of people, like even in the Thunder crowd, there's smiles. Like it's one of the few times where just, and I remember that game because that's, they were going for 73 wins. They needed like every win they could get. I remember Mike Breen hit a note I've never heard him hit before. When he makes the call, nails it.
He did great.
Brilliant moment. I think you mentioned Steph's disadvantages, but I think the reason that so many people bizarrely dislike him so much is because he's an upper class kid.
Yeah. So he's a rich kid, and he and Clay both the children of NBA players. There's also a really messed up race thing, you know, that I don't feel totally equipped to talk about it, but it's awful. And basically, it's like you're not really black. I mean, that's kind of there's a subtext that seems really shitty to me. And I get, you know, the whole they're rich kids, and I certainly use that against people I dislike. Ahem. You know, I'm not even going to say the name. Kobe Bryant. No. but like Bill Laimbeer, you know, and
Boston's own.
Jesus. He does not belong to Boston. That's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. Just, he might have been born in a Massachusetts hospital. It doesn't make him Boston's own. I don't believe that. I don't buy that. It's deeply offensive to all of us.
That because then that way NYC can claim Jordan because he was born in Brooklyn. So I like to play like, that way.
That's funny. Was Jordan born in Brooklyn?
He was. Yeah.
Wow, not North Carolina, huh?
No.
I would just say whatever is happening with Del Curry and Sonia Curry, your family is messed up too, whoever you are. You know, don't throw stones, you know? I mean, messed up is the wrong, whatever. Like, relationships come.
We all have struggles that we would rather not everyone know about, you know?
Yeah, everyone talk about. Yeah, I agree. Anyway.
For example, one might point out to the Magic Johnson Hour as being a mistake that one would not made publicized. But we at the Jacobin Sports Show can look down on that kind of shit because we have surpassed it. So Magic Johnson...
Let me ask you this. I gotta say, Magic Johnson is a billionaire.
A billionaire,
which I don't know how... look, he was a great player, but you can't root for a billionaire. You know, that just seems wrong to me.
No.
Also, whatever his great business sense is, and clearly, I mean, I get the impression, I'm pulling this entirely out of my ass. So tell me if I'm wrong.
Go for it.
I get the impression he was pulled into some real estate dealings that made him quite wealthy. That's how Jerry Buss made his money. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any relationship there, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As a media personality and pitch man, and this is where Twitter is very funny. The Magic Johnson burner account, that's just a series.
That's incredible. It's incredible.
Completely banal tweets just about the Milwaukee Bucks are your NBA champions. You know, like whatever.
Yeah.
It really captures, he is the least engaging, least insightful media personality. He's terrible as an NBA announcer. He always was.
He was.
The Magic Hour was just bizarrely ill-conceived. How can you be so famous for your gregarious public personality and be the most wooden person after decades in the media spotlight? I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, I would much rather watch Paul Pierce. I'm sorry. That's true. Talk about the NBA than Magic Johnson or anything else. And then the fact they made him the general manager. I mean, even that he had to resign. What was everyone thinking? I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Not just that. Remember, he was the general manager. He was manager for a while. The coach. He was the coach. He bumped
right in the 90s.
Yep. And sadly, it came right after he had been critical of either the prior, maybe it was Randy Fund. He'd been critical of some Laker coach and basically said, like, if he could coach today, and it was not a great success for Magic Johnson. I think the thing with Magic Johnson is that he seems to do really well in things that are competitive, and like maybe he's good at that. Like maybe he knows, even as an investor, he knows who to access, who to listen to, who to follow. But anything that doesn't involve some kind of competition, like, he is not of that element at all. I would encourage anyone, go to YouTube and just type in Howard Stern, Magic Johnson, and kick back and relax. That's all for today, Jonah. We've made a lot of complaints. We've gotten a lot off our chests. It's time to think about what we've done, who we've offended in Nebraska, etc. Please remember, you can follow Jonah Birch online at Jonah B, on Twitter at JonahB1793. I am at MMiranda613. Also, you can follow the Magic Johnson burner account at MagicsBurner. It's well worth your time. Please remember to follow Jacobin Sports on Twitter at Jacobin Sports, and to email thoughts, questions, or suggestions to JacobinSports@gmail.com. It really means a lot, actually, to get emails from people, so please send them. It's like, you know, how no one sends mail anymore or even email. Like, it's nice to get an email. Our producer, as always, is the Invisible Man, Connor Gillies. That is all for this week's episode. We will see you all next time. Suck it, freaks and geeks.